You're listening to Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family. Welcome to Sleep Stories for Equestrians. I'm your host, Ashley Winch. We're so happy you're here to relax and unwind. If you fall asleep and miss the story, we will recap it at the beginning of the next episode. We've also selected and edited these stories for ultimate relaxation, removing any stressful bits without affecting the story's integrity, so you can focus on drifting off to sleep. With that, let's settle down and prepare for our story. The gates are closed. The horses sleep. The day's work done. The chores complete. Now let us rest, our bodies and minds. Drift off to sleep and close your eyes. It's time for us to turn down for the night. Now let's breathe in, breathe out, and turn off the light. One more time, breathe out, breathe in. Now, let us begin. On the last episode of Sleep Stories for Equestrians, the elf tried to understand why people treat some horses certain ways through a conversation with her friend Invicta. Tonight, we will read the next chapter, Training for the Show. I was very much interested when what I call my real training for the show began. Of course, for some time now, I had been getting to go faster and faster, but I could not go as quickly as my brother Eros, much to my disappointment. Master encouraged me in every possible way, but he would never let me go on with my training if I seemed the least bit tired. And though I felt that I should succeed in beating both Eros and Chanticleer, if I might have one more try, I always stopped when I heard Master's woe, as he had taught me to do, for I wouldn't have disobeyed his dear voice, no, not to beat all the other horses in the world. Although Master trained me to go very fast, he would never let me keep up the speed for more than a few hundred yards at a time. He always urged me on with his voice, and as I have told you before, never thought of using a whip, and I was made to go rest after every fresh trial to get up greater speed. Master made us listen to all sorts of queer noises, to people talking loudly together, to a band playing every kind of music, first soft and low and soothing, then noisy, loud, and startling. And one morning, he fastened the tail of each of us with a small tin biscuit box into which Ricketts had put a few stones. Every time we moved, the stones bumped up and down, and the noise was awful. Eros and Chanticleer enjoyed the fun, and racing one after the other made a tremendous clatter. I was frightened, and I didn't like to move because of the noise the stones made in the box fastened to my tail. I neighed to Master to tell him how frightened I felt, and begged him to make Eros and Chanticleer stand still and to take the tin away from my tail, for the noise really hurt my ears. Master, however, was much too kind to take any notice of my fears beyond urging me to move about, because he knew so well that at the show I would have to listen to all sorts of weird cries and noises, and that if I didn't try to get used to them beforehand, I should be very frightened when the day came and might not be able to race properly. In answer to my appeal, for we never told him a trouble in vain, He patted my head and let me nestle against him for a few moments, and then made me move about as the others were doing with great zest. By and by, I began to mind the noise less and less, and in time, my sensitive ears got quite accustomed to the most fearful racket which I think it possible for either three horses or three humans to produce. If my readers are in any doubt about this noisiness and think I am making an unnecessary fuss, I would suggest that one day, when they have the garden quite to themselves, that they go into the corner of it, which is very farthest away from the house, and try the tin box game. Please remember to go a long way from the house, friends, or you may get into trouble with other humans, and I don't want you to do that, or for them to think badly of me for putting the idea into your heads. And also, I don't want their ears to be hurt as mine were as first. I and Eros and Chanticleer very soon found that none of the noises hurt us, and when we got to the show and heard the many various sounds there, we did not mind them at all, and were able to assure and comfort many of the friends we met there, who had not had a master train them as ours had trained us. After the tin box game, Master tied reins loosely around our legs, and when we found they did not hurt us in any way, we just took no notice of them. Master also let the reins slip under our tails, but none of us minded in the least. We stood still and went on and did everything which Master told us to do, just as though our reins were in the proper place. No one had ever hurt our tails, and when the reins touched them, we were not afraid. But Master tested us in these various ways, so that we were prepared for almost any emergency which might happen to us. We always found that we remained unhurt, and we grew very brave and fearless, and liked the fun of our training very much. Our coats were always kept in beautiful order, so that they needed no special preparation for the show. Master, as you may suppose, was most particular about our appearance, and Ricketts and the men under him just vied with each other in seeing who could get the most gloss on the coat of the special horse committed to his care. 2 days before the show, when we went back to the stable yard after our training, little Evelyn Ricketts ran up to me to give me a piece of sugar, and I heard her ask Master how I had got on. She took the keenest interest in our preparations for the show, and when we were dragging those tin boxes out, I don't think anyone enjoyed the noise more than Evelyn did. She was very anxious that I should beat both Eros and Chanticleer in the American trotting class, for which we were all entered. The Americans and Russians scarcely ever dock their horses, and they are so strongly against this practice that they will not allow any horse with a docked tail to enter any of their particular classes. Evelyn put her arms around my neck and kissed me and encouraged me all she could, and told me to remember how my mother, Lady Beechwood, had won the championship at Richmond Horse Show for going fast, and also of the great reputation of my father, George Hummer, for very fast racing. I was much cheered by Evelyn's loving words, but the successes of both Eros and Chanticleer whenever we had a race made me feel very doubtful about myself and my powers, and when Master came to say goodnight to me, I nestled against him and told him what I felt, and he quietly understood and told me to do my best at the show, and then, even if I won no prize at all, not to worry about it. You are just elf to me, and with all the prizes in the world, or no prize at all, will not make the least difference of my feelings for you. and I knew Master meant what he said. But just because I am so dear to him, it makes me more anxious than ever to win him all the honors I can. When Master left me, Minnie took my thoughts off myself by telling me about a row which she had with the kitchen cat. Tabby, in her way, was quite as good a cat as Minnie, though of course she had not such a beautiful coat, and this made her rather jealous of my little friend. It turned out that cook had put Minnie's milk into Tabby's saucer by mistake, and when Minnie was enjoying her supper just before coming to me for the night, Tabby, thinking that she was stealing her milk, had gone up to her and slapped her face, and actually pulled a big mouthful of hair out of her beautiful ruffle. And Tabby could not have chosen a more effectual way to hurt and insult Minnie. Furious with rage and indignation, Minnie told me that she struck out at Tabby, and a fierce quarrel had ensued. The saucer of milk was tippled over, and then Barney and Nero rushed out from their kennels to find out what the noise was all about. "Barney and Nero didn't wait to ask about the dispute," said Minnie, "and they evidently thought that I had stolen Tabby's milk, for they both looked very coldly at me, and then Barney, in that clever way of his, picked up Tabby's saucer in his mouth and marched off to the cook. Tabby left me and followed Barney into the kitchen, and it was very hard for me to bear Tabby's look of triumph as cook put down before her a saucer full of beautiful milk. I tried to get near cook to show her I wanted supper too, for of course I had lost mine. But Barney and Nero were displeased with me and guarded the door until cook ordered them back to their kennels and shut me as well as them out of her cheery, warm kitchen. I felt very injured and badly treated," continued Minnie, "and I know I shall have a bad night because I am so hungry." I sincerely hoped that Minnie would not have a bad night, because that meant one for me too, for she never thought of lying anywhere but on my back, however restless she felt. We were both trying to get to sleep, and I had tried to comfort Minnie when we heard voices coming outside, and Ricketts came into the stable, followed by the cook, carrying Minnie's own bowl full of beautiful warm milk. She had found out her mistake just as she was going to bed, and thinking that most likely Tabby had both suppers, as both had been put into her saucer, she now brought milk for Minnie. When cook came to my stable, she never forgot me. When she had put down the milk for Minnie, she gave me a huge lump of sugar. I tried to eat it very quietly, so that Eros and Chanticleer might not know about this tidbit, for cook didn't care for either of them as she cared for me, and didn't often bring them anything to eat. When Minnie had finished her milk, she curled up again on my back, and in spite of quarrels and worries, we both had a very good night. Thank you for listening to tonight's episode of Sleep Stories for Equestrians. Allow this gentle and soothing music to carry you off to dreamland.